Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James and welcome to the show. Today, we'll be looking ahead to Saturday's trip for Fulham to Molineux to face Wolves. Can we break into the top 10 and make it three wins in a row? If we do get 3 points up in the Black Country, it will mean that we break into the top 10. Well, I'm pretty sure for the first time this season, not 100% sure. I haven't done the maths, but certainly it'll be a monumental moment in the campaign. We'll also do the final word on Saturday's win over Brighton. Plus, we've got a load of emails and your This'll Catch-Ons at the end of the podcast. I'm joined today by Jack Collins. Hello.
Hello, Sammy. Hello, listeners. How you doing?
Good, thank you, mate. Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's nice to be in the studio. All good. All ticking along nicely. Good vibes.
Isn't it just such a nice time to be a Fulham fan? I've just been enjoying it so much in the last kind of week or two. Just supporting this club is really delicious right now.
Yeah, it feels, I think, maybe more so due to the fact that we're at a point where, before the season, I think a recipe for disaster is probably too strong, but we were definitely at a point where things were uncomfortable. We obviously lost Mitrovic relatively late in the window, obviously the season had started, and then there was the fear around Polina going right at the end. Now, that didn't come to pass, but that lack of an obvious replacement, obviously, come into play with Mitrovic as well. I think it felt like the seeds were there for discontent in the idea that after such a brilliant campaign last year, there was space to kick on and Fulham didn't feel like we were taking that advantage. And actually, whilst we still, you know, are not in the same place, as you say, this will be the first time in the top 10, I think since August. I think after that first win against Everton.
Oh yeah,
on the opening day. But I mean, the table is the table after one game. Yeah. So it definitely feels like it would be a massive moment, but also to even keep this team level and to even be close to recreating what happened last season, I think would be a massive, you know, check in Marco Silva's book to show what he's been able to achieve. So yeah, I think things feel rosy at the moment. And look, considering a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about that Everton game at home and saying, will we be regretting that come the end of the season? It feels a million miles from there. Since, you know, what we've seen in the last couple of weeks. And it's incredible, as you say, what two wins can do for you, not only in the table, which is quite congested in this middle part, but also just in terms of morale and feeling. And the idea that we've gone from being like, oh, have we one eye over our shoulders, to, okay, it's still unlikely, but with that freedom now and the freedom from the constraints of we're not going to be dragged into that relegation battle, is there the opportunity to maybe take a late punt, late dart at Europe? I think it's probably still a stretch. But it's definitely not outside the realms of possibility.
Do we know whether, how long will it be until we know about the eighth place?
We won't, I don't think, until the sort of latter stages of all of the European competitions are set, because only once that's happened can we work out the coefficients. I think we can get a relatively good idea by the time that the Champions League, Europa League and Conference League get to the semi-finals, but it won't be set until we have results in those competitions.
I just wondered if you might get like a bit of a mad situation where like Tottenham might be in fifth and they might be hoping that like Arsenal win the Champions League.
Yeah, it's very plausible. I think it's interesting now watching teams in those spaces basically having to support, or not, maybe not outwardly, but inwardly and definitely in the back rooms and the engine rooms of clubs will be hoping that all the rest of the clubs in the English clubs in these competitions go far. And you'll get that across Europe with German teams who don't normally want Bayern Munich to win, being like, we could probably do with them getting through a few rounds, the Italian side supporting each other. It's going to be something that comes into play a little bit more.
Yeah. And on a side note, I noticed that the other day UEFA announced the kind of new format for the Champions League, the Europa League and the Conference League if we get there.
Yeah.
At first, I thought that this whole league thing, the big 36 team league, might be rubbish. But actually, I've looked into it a little bit more. I actually think it will make the group stages much more of a thing to watch from a neutral's point of view.
I have my issues with it. Namely that we've seen managers of big clubs talking more and more about fixture congestion and banging on about the Carabao Cup and FA Cup replays. And yet I haven't seen one of them speak out about an expanded group stage in the Champions League, funny enough. So I have my issues with the hypocrisy surrounding that.
Yeah.
But in terms of a format, I'm open. I think this is it. I'm open-minded. We haven't had a format change in the Champions League since we moved away from double group stages around the turn of the century. So it's the first time that most of us will have seen or been, you know, a watching age to have understood what that actually means. So I'm open-minded. I'm willing to give it a
go. I guess for me, when's the last time, I know you watch European football as a neutral all the time, but I can't remember a time really where a group stage game massively pulsated me as a neutral. Yeah. Now, I know there will be moments where it's been, but in terms of like real jeopardy in the group.
Yeah, there hasn't been in the Champions League at the very least for some time. There's quite a lot of jeopardy towards the end, I think, or has been towards the end of the Europa League group stages. Part of that being that first and second really matter.
Yeah.
In terms of you have to play an extra two games if you come second or if you come third and you drop down. I think that there has been a bit more jeopardy in the end of the Europa League group this year between Rangers and Real Betis and Slavia Prague was one which the three cheating teams changed positions three times on the final night. So there has been, but not so much, I think, in the top competitions where it tends to be two sides that pull away. And I think you're right. It will add some jeopardy to that. And I think a few more of those big name clashes in the first couple of rounds.
Yeah. And also like the fact that you play eight different teams, each club plays, I think, seven different teams. Eight different teams, meaning you don't have the kind of monotony of like, right, that
home
team
and away,
away and stuff. Like you actually will get lots to do. Every team, every single match day, you'll go into it being like, wow, there's some really interesting matches in here that I might want to feast on. I mean, that's obviously what they're going for, neutrals, aren't they? Trying to appeal more rather, because as a fan of one of those clubs, I mean, you would watch those games regardless because it's your team. But as someone, as a follower of a team that's not in those European competitions, sometimes I must admit, I would rarely like stay at home or whatever to specifically watch a group stage match.
I think from a Conference League perspective, which is probably the most relevant to Fulham.
Yeah.
There's still only six games, but it's six different teams. As you say, that's three random aways that you could get from anywhere and three interesting teams coming to the cottage. That would be the most incredible thing. And so whilst the games remain low, which I think is a good thing in the Conference League spectrum and actually keeping teams from having to overcommit to European squads when they might be in a competition once and not again, I think all of that is a good thing.
Yeah.
It's incredibly exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing how it works. I've played with it on Football Manager.
All right.
And kind of understood the concept from that perspective. But yeah, I'm excited about it.
There could be an element though of next year not being in Europe could be quite advantageous, whilst all the big teams and even the Europa teams kind of get to grips with eight group stage games.
Yeah.
It could be quite fruitful for teams in that like mid-pack to actually get some scalps. Because as you know, like playing midweek football when you haven't played, and I felt it like in the Brighton game a little bit as well. We were fresh. Brighton had played on the Wednesday in the FA Cup and really kind of left it all out there trying to get an equaliser against Wolves. It's such a massive advantage. And I actually think if you had Marcus Silva plus a fresh squad and no Europe, I know that like if you give me the option now, do I want the Conference League or not? Of course, I would go for it. Like you don't turn that down. But it would be, I think, I would be quite excited to see what Fulham can do if they didn't have the strain of European football, plus all of the European teams having more European football.
Yeah, I mean, I it could be interesting. I think it would probably benefit a team who were in a false position, not in terms of their performances on this pitch, but in terms of squad depth. So, you know, those lot down the road.
Yeah.
Who will be looking at this and thinking, we don't want European football now. Like, and I'm sure that that's not the way that their management and board are thinking about it. But if you're looking at that and going, right, we're going to refresh the squad one more time in the summer, we're going to go for it and try and put together a side that we think is capable of challenging for the Champions League spots and then playing against teams who are playing eight games. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the most advantage could probably be gleaned. But yeah, I agree with the point.
Well, I mean, they reportedly were going to say no to the Conference League, weren't they, if they got there because of the different financial fair play
stipulations
rules
in Europe. Would that mean it dropped down to ninth? Like, who knows how that looks?
Yeah. Anyway, let's look back quickly at Brighton. Obviously, everyone did a great job on Sunday's podcast of dissecting the game. Just interested to get your thoughts just before we head into the Wolves preview of what was a convincing win,
But like, I think maybe watching the highlights and you realised how close Brighton came a couple of times to getting back into that game in the second half. Maybe some of my post-match excitement slightly, I don't think we got away with it, but there was a couple of moments in that set. If Brighton, if Buonanotte's had gone inside the post, had Everton Ferguson finished that one that he should have really?
He was offside. But
no, but there was another one where he wasn't offside. Yeah. That would have taken the gloss off it somewhat, but I guess that's all ifs, buts and maybes. It didn't go inside the post and we can celebrate a comprehensive 3-0 win. But I just thought there were moments in that second half where maybe in hindsight, actually, did we let that second half slip a tad?
Yeah, definitely. I think that whilst I completely appreciate it, and I came out of the game on a massive high as well, and I thought your post-match quick take was brilliant with Dan on the River, I did watch it back later that night and think, oh, I think maybe we've just glossed over some of the points in the second half where it did become a little bit uncomfortable. And so first off, I thought we were sensational. I thought we were fresher, quicker out of the blocks. We, you know, limited them to, okay, the odd unpressed strike from distance, which maybe someone like Nciso should have done a little bit better with. But most of the time it felt like, for me, Fulham were in control of the first half. The second half, after the big opportunities for Wilson and Pereira, which, I mean, one of which should have definitely gone in the back of the net, and that would have meant that the game had been run away and taken away from Brighton. So it's worth caveating these kind of negatives, if you will, with the fact that we should have been out of sight. But once we weren't, I thought there were a couple of things that I struggled with. I thought that Marco got the substitutions on the whole wrong. And what we needed was, because we were sat back behind the ball, we were 2-0 up, they had to come for us. And yet we tried to bring on players who were trying to control the game. And I thought that was a bit of a strange maneuver. He brought on Willian and TC, two players who are very comfortable in possession, who like to be on the ball. And I think we tried to go for control when actually we needed thrust. And as soon as he brought Adama on to provide that, we went and scored a third.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a coincidence. And even the Bobby substitution, and I, you know, joked to Steve next to me at the cottage, I was like, oh, Marco's going for it. It's only 2-0, he's going for it. bringing on Bobby for Harrison. But as soon as we had those players on the pitch who were able to offer a little bit more on that counter thrust, we sealed the deal. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that bringing TC on for control at a point where we just didn't have the ball or really want the ball, to be honest,
Yeah. Felt
like a bit of a strange move. I wanted to give a little bit of plaudit to Sasha Lukic, who I thought was the best player on the park. And I thought that when Fulham had that control with him in the centre, and what he did in the first half, just breaking up play and recycling it, was sensational. And there is a legitimate question, not in terms of will Marco do this, because as soon as Polina is available again, Marco will bring him back in. He is Fulham's best player. But in terms of form, I think it'd be very difficult to drop Sasha Lukic right now, because what he's shown over the last two games has been absolutely immense. There's a couple of, you know, other bits and bobs. I think it's notable that when Andreas went off, our press fell apart and we stopped being able to push Brighton backwards. And that's when they set up camp in the Fulham half. And it just goes to show, and we'll talk about Andreas a little bit more in a minute, but it does just go to show that even when Andreas is having a bad game on the ball, and this wasn't generally, I don't think, from him, but obviously the big thing that will stand out to people's minds is that miss and not going through and scoring the third goal. Even when he can frustrate on the ball, his ability off the ball is absolutely essential to what this Fulham side do. And it's no coincidence whatsoever that when Andreas went off, we lost our ability to press from the front. And it meant that we just went further and further backwards. And that's when these opportunities for Brighton did open up.
I do notice often when Andreas, he gets subbed off, I feel like, most games.
Yeah.
And there definitely is a drop-off in some of Fulham's play and the intensity of the press. Let's come on to Andreas now, because since we last did a Thursday club, he was selected for the upcoming Brazil friendlies.
Delighted for him.
Yeah, massive congratulations to Andreas. I think a huge dream achieved for him, even if he doesn't play too much in these games. I think just being around the Brazil squad is going to be immense for him. And the fact that one of those games is at Wembley against England as well is hugely exciting for him. No Rodrigo Muniz.
Yet.
I think his time might come if he keeps up this scoring rate for Fulham particularly. But on Andreas, I think I'm delighted for Andreas, but I think we'd be lying if we said that the odd eyebrow wasn't raised across the Fulham fan base that, I mean, he's not been as good this season as he was last season. I think that's not too outrageous to say that he's in the Brazil squad.
Yeah, well,
I mean, it's in the nicest way possible.
No, 100%. I think it's worth putting the context on it that this Brazil squad are light on actually attacking midfielders and pure attacking midfielders because Dorival, I think, will play with a 10, like an out-and-out number 10, or at the very least, the player who's going to spearhead the midfield will be asked to get into those attacking roles. And you look at the midfielders in this squad, obviously Andre, it's for Pereira to get a relationship with him ahead of next season as well. Bruno Guimarães, Casemiro, Douglas Luiz, João Gomes at Wolves, and Pablo Maia, who's at Sao Paulo, who's another player that Fulham were linked with for a long time, and who is another sort of defensively minded player. And I like Maia a lot, but he's not a 10, I don't think, by any stretch of the imagination. Then you've got Lucas Paqueta and Bruno Guimarães. And you look at, normally you'd go, okay, there must be a couple of wingers who can play inside. Which of Martinelli, Rafinha, Richarlison, Rodrigo, Savio at Girona or Vinny Jr. are going to play in a 10? I don't think the answer is any of them. I think that those are all out and out wingers or inside forwards at the very least, but not players who you'd go, okay, you're going to play behind the striker and work off him in close quarters. And that's something that Marco Silva has talked a lot about. He's talked about the fact that even when Andreas hasn't been at his best, and I agree, I think from the eye test and what we're seeing, no one is going to sit here and say Andreas has been as good this year as he was last year. Now, part of that will be him not having a preseason. Part of that will be that relationship with Mitrovic, which has gone away, and he's had to build different relationships with both Raul Jimenez and with Rodrigo Muniz.
He also looks quite uncomfortable. That the finish on Saturday was someone lacking confidence for me. Because the goal was there, there was a moment to strike it, and he took an extra touch.
I just think the touch is heavy. I think he's trying to go around the goalkeeper, and I think he pushes the touch too far.
And he was so angry afterwards, as if there must be... I feel like he's putting immense pressure on himself, and it's probably not helpful, the crowd reaction, but I'm not slating anyone. I mean, like, it was...
No, it's frustrating. Yeah,
it's frustrating, but I feel like, despite this Fulham squad being a very good place, I'm not 100% sure he's... I don't know if he's immensely happy with, you know, probably his output, I guess, probably in terms of goals and assists.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing is that when you talk about the players that who would play in that role for Brazil, right? Obviously, Neymar comes to mind. He's out for the season. Talk about maybe someone like João Pedro at Brighton, who's in an injury bit himself, and also Brighton have a lot of football at the moment. And I think that maybe Dorival is aware of that. Think about Gabi Jesus, who's just coming back from an injury and working his way back into contention for Arsenal. There's not loads of options. So considering that Dorival and Pereira have a relationship already from his time at Flamengo, where he managed him, he's aware of what he can do. He'll be aware of that off-ball work rate. And this is going to be a slightly different Brazil side, right? So obviously there's been a change of manager. It's not going to be maybe as free-flowing and attacking as teams have been in, you know, historically, although I wouldn't say that that's what they felt like under their last coach. I think that there is going to be a little bit more emphasis placed on work rate. And you can see that with the squad selection. And I think that what Dorival would have seen is, well, this is what Andreas puts out every single week off the ball. Marco Silva talked about it, him leading the press, him being very close to the striker. And we've just talked about it, how Fulham fall off when that isn't there. I think all of that will be a reason. I don't think Andreas is going to start.
Yeah.
I think that Paqueta is having a sensational season himself when he's been fit, but also just has that space ahead of Andreas in terms of the pecking order. I'd be surprised if he doesn't play. And I think it's a real opportunity for him. It's been a long, long time. I think it's 6 years since his last and only Brazil call-up, which was in a friendly, if I'm not mistaken. In that time, Belgium have tried to ask him to change nationalities. You can switch after a friendly. He said, you know, I grew up in Belgium, but my parents are Brazilian. My family is Brazilian. Yeah. My heart is Brazilian. And I get that. I absolutely get that. So for him to have got this call-up is wonderful for him. Peter's written a lovely piece on this on The Athletic, if you want to read about it a little bit more. But I think that maybe we underestimate as well what Andreas brings to the table. And I saw a brilliant set of tweets from the Cottage Tactico, brilliant account, basically just about the fact that even still, without being at his best, Andreas is influencing games. And there's a chart brought up by Data MB on here, which is basically showing the players that have got a better output than Andreas this season. Now, do take into account that this includes set pieces, which Andreas takes more of than any of the rest of these players. And also Andreas' set pieces lead to more direct shots than anyone else in the Premier League. So that does have a figure in here. But the players that are above him are Maddison, Gross, Harvey Elliott, Ødegaard and Paqueta. He's ahead of Bruno. He's ahead of Eberechi Eze. He's ahead of Eriksen. There's a lot of good players here who fall behind Pereira in these stats. Now, not all of them played as much, etc. But with stats adjusted, I think that that's a pretty good place for him to be. And I'm delighted. I'm really delighted for him.
Yeah, and I do think there's an element of it's very easy as a football fan, and I'm totally guilty of it as well, just to look at goals and assists. And like, I mean, if you look at goals and assists, you'd say that Bobby Reid has had 10 times the season of Andreas Pereira, and quite clearly that isn't...
No, that isn't the case.
That isn't the case.
His goal involvements are down, and that is something that he will want to address, right?
Yeah.
His output is something that needs work, and it's something that I'm sure... Marcus Silva will be expecting him to rise back to the levels of last season. Not that last season it was outrageous, but it was higher than where we are right now. And I think he'll be expected to get back to that. But what I love about Andreas, and I said this last week, is that even when he's not playing well, his off-ball ability, his ability to lead the press, his decision-making when he's actually picking a runner to track and close down is pretty sublime. And we've always said, if you're not playing well, play hard. And Andreas never shirks a shift, and I love that.
Yeah. One more thing before we move on to the Wolves preview. Also, since we did Thursday Club, Erik ten Hag had a complete head loss.
Oh, yeah, just lost the plot, yeah.
About Fulham's TikTok that was poking fun at... Bruno Fernandes in the game at Old Trafford, where he kind of got slightly touched by Sasa Lukic. He then went down, then realised that there was a chance for him to potentially have a strike on goal. So he got back up, and Fulham put this TikTok up of the clip with the caption, "So glad he's okay." And then Erik ten Hag asked Fulham and said they should apologise. Marcus Silva, I thought, was actually very good in the press conference.
Very, very brilliant. Like, I honestly thought this response couldn't have been smarter, more savvy, and also just complete defuse.
Yeah. I mean, he was just like, I think it's Marco saying, like, I don't.
He's like, oh, we've got a game here and you're talking to me about TikTok. But he also spoke about Ten Hag and he was like, he's obviously just defending his player. Like, yeah. That's exactly what I would do in the same situation. They were like, would you ask for an apology? He was like, no, because I don't watch TikTok. But
yeah,
like, he was very calmer. It was very like,
it was though, enjoyable.
Pouring a teacup.
It was enjoyable, though, from a Fulham perspective, just to watch, like, complete head loss.
It was madness. Like, as in, like, as anyone, and I do get it, and I do get what Marco's saying about him defending his player as well. All of that adds up. But I just in terms of, just don't say anything. You don't need to, you can be like, look, Bruno's suffering through an injury. You can say he plays through the pain barrier. That's fine. Leave it there. That's absolutely fine. That would have done more than enough. To come out and be like, we need an apology is farcical. And I think it just that is the signs of a man under severe pressure.
Yeah, it was enjoyable, I thought, for 24 hours from a Fulham perspective, just to...
Yeah, well, City really missed a trick not doing the same thing this weekend with Marcus Rashford. Like, that would have been excellent, but, you know, we are where we are. But
yeah, Ten Hag would have fully lost the plot if that was the case. All right, we'll take a break there. Afterwards, we'll look ahead to Wolves on Saturday.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Jack Collins. Quick thank you to our sponsors on the Thursday Club this season, which is Green King Sport. If you want to watch any televised sport during the month of March, then get down to your local Green King Sport pub where they show every single televised match, no matter whether it's on Sky, TNT, Prime, BBC, ITV, they have got it. Obviously, big weekend of sport. Fulham, not on the box, but
shock.
There is the Six Nations. And also on Sunday, you've got Manchester City versus Liverpool. Or Liverpool versus Manchester City, I should say. So if you're at a loose end and you want to make sure you watch all the action, head to your local Green King Sport pub. And if you download the Green King Sports app, you'll get 10% off your drinks during the period of any televised game. Jack, Wolves on Saturday. We head up to Molineux. I'm hopeful. I'm pretty confident it won't be as hot as last time.
Can't be.
I mean, that was the world's hottest day. I've still not forgiven them for the flamethrowers. I'm still just hot thinking about that day. Wolves, I mean, obviously they've done brilliantly this season, haven't they? I'm ashamed. It will do our end of season review of our predictions. I think all three of us, me, you and Peter, said that Wolves would be in the drop zone.
Yeah.
How wrong we were, but we were not the only ones. I think pretty much the entire football community had written off Wolves before this season when they kind of went from that in that basket case week where their Lopetegui left and then Gary O'Neill came in.
And they sold most of their squad. Like
They've done so well.
It's been phenomenal. It's been a really, really good achievement. And O'Neill should be up there in the conversation, I think, for manager of the year in terms of expectation versus what he's delivered. I still think they're in a slightly false position. I don't think they're quite as good as perhaps they've, like their position suggests in the table. And there have been some big results, but I still think they're a very good side. They're a comfortable mid-table side. And even that in itself, compared to where I think expectations were, even within the Wolves fan base before the season started, it's probably a major achievement. So I like it too. I think this is a good time to be playing them. Obviously, they're missing their two main goal threats in Hwang Hee-chan and Mateus Cunha. And I think on top of that, you're looking at maybe a potential couple of issues elsewhere that might just need them to bear attention to. You know, Pedro Neto went off with a questionable injury. It looks like he'll be back. Similar for João Gomes. But they now have this kind of separate thing going on where they're into the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. They're a game from Wembley.
And they're playing Coventry at home, and Coventry aren't to be sniffed at, but my word.
Ellis Sims goal machine.
Yeah, no. What would we do to have that situation, have a quarterfinal home against Coventry for a place at Wembley? We'd bite your arm off.
Yeah, 100%. And that's it's a smaller Midlands derby, but it remains a Midlands derby nonetheless. Yeah. That's a massive opportunity for them to go in, put their hat in the ring. So they have to consider where they are in terms of what they're willing to risk and what they're not at this point. I don't think this game will be, higher the priority list, although they will feel it's winnable, and so they should, considering what we've seen so far this year. So will Fulham. And I think that might open itself out to a really nice game. If Gomes is back, this midfield battle is absolutely intriguing because Wolves have three, I think, I don't know if they'll play all three of them, but they have three of the most complementary parts of a midfield that I've seen across any team, I think, in the league this season, outside maybe the biggest guns. Bellegarde, João Gomes, and Lamina, they have such a good understanding of what each can do. When one goes, one stays. I've talked about Bellegarde on here before. I really, really like him. I think he's a bit of a Moussa Dembele clone in the wings, kind of waiting to explode out of his shell. João Gomes is phenomenal. What a pickup that is from Brazil for them. Also in, the Brazil squad, as we spoke about earlier, and absolutely rightly so. I think he's really got a bit of everything about him as a defensive midfielder, and what a brilliant replacement for Ruben Neves that's been. So that in itself is good. And then we know all about Mario Lamina, but he continues to do exactly what he did when he was quite beloved in a bad season at Fulham for his work rate, for his ability to sort of do a bit of everything and knit it all together. He's had a tough year emotionally with obviously everything that's gone on off the pitch, but he continues to deliver on it. And Wolves have made a very astute signing there, I think, in Lamina.
Yeah, one of many players from that season that I'm sad that aren't still at Fulham.
I really liked Lamina. I thought he was a really good pickup, and he came in and was brilliant.
Probably a top three. of players from that season? Because obviously, I'm just listing out players here. Alphonse Areola, Joachim Andersson, Ademola Lookman, Mario Lemina, as we mentioned. Ola Aina?
Yeah, Ola Aina was there, but I mean, he probably doesn't come quite into this conversation for me. I think I'd have Lookman top.
Josh Madger?
yeah, Josh Madger. Actually, make him top. I think I'd have Lookman top, considering what he's delivered since for Atalanta. And then I'd probably have Lemina in second, because I think he'd fit into this team like a glove. Joachim Andersson was great. Areola was great. I'm pretty sure I'm comfortable.
Arguably, Anguissa you can put in this category. If Anguissa's
in this category, he goes top for me. I genuinely still think he's one of the best midfielders in Europe. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
We were denied the Polina-Anguissa partnership, which would have just ran games.
Yeah, we might have won the league if that had been the case. I mean, myself and Coops were talking about it the other day, of just like, blood on your hands for that team, not in hindsight and all
having
of that.
No attacking output whatsoever. Yeah, it was just really frustrating.
From that team, it's incredible. Looking at Wolves' wins and losses, I mean, they've had obviously some really standout results, you know, winning 4-2 at the Bridge, what we do for that, you know, the 2-1 win at Tottenham. They've had some random losses. I mean, I'm looking straight here in the face at the 2-0 loss at home to Brentford. And I do just wonder...
Weird game, that.
It was a weird game, but, and obviously they weren't brilliant at Newcastle either, although they did have the caveat that they played in the Cup, so at Newcastle in fairness. They weren't amazing in that win over Sheffield United either. They kind of laboured to a 1-0 win. They're obviously brilliant on the counter. How do we set up? I guess it's going to be a case of not allowing them to get on the counter, but I guess the problem is if Wolves do go 1-0 up and we have to push for it, then they're going to have those opportunities. And if Pedro Neto's fit, he has been so lethal for them, particularly on the counter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to lock him down, and it's going to be very interesting to see that battle between him and Anthony Robinson on that side. I assume he'll play on the right. So how that looks and what that battle looks like could be defining, I think, for this game. And it could be very intriguing to see whether Robinson is given the license to get forward quite as much with Pedro Neto there sitting behind him. We also have to bear in mind that Calvin Bassey, we saw at the weekend, putting out counter-attack fires left, right and centre. And so with all of that said, I think we might be well equipped on that left-hand side to be able to deal with the threat of Pedro Neto. Cue him scoring a hat-trick. But like on paper, this Fulham team should be relatively well set up to deal with that on that side in particular. Now, whether that forces a change of system, whether it forces him to actually switch sides and maybe try and attack the other side and get in a Castagna and Tosin, will be interesting to see what, you know, how Gary O'Neill and how Pedro Neto himself tries to deal with that. But I am excited about seeing that matchup, because I think if we can nullify that threat with Hwang and Cunha also out, it really does limit Wolves' attacking potential and therefore maybe allows Fulham to start to dominate this game in terms of territory and possession.
Yeah, I really hope that, you know, we can maybe learn from the lessons of kind of teams like Spurs and Chelsea. And actually in the home game,
to be honest, we look at that Brentford game plan and go, that's the game plan. That's how you beat Wolves. And, you know, much as it was a weird game and it had some strange, you know, decisions, but also some strange kind of moments in it, it did feel like Brentford got that one completely right. And Marcus Silva will be looking at that and thinking, well, that's how you undo them at home. And, you know, what you say about the big results, the last month or so feels like Wolves are reverted a little bit. Obviously, they're missing a couple of big players, and that really plays into it. This isn't really a slight on them by any stretch of the imagination. It's more kind of those players have been missing and you felt it within the Wolves squad. And therefore, if those kind of performances continue, there's no reason that Fulham can't get something out of this with the way that we've been playing of late.
Yeah. Speaking of Fulham lineup, you alluded to it earlier. Polina is back after his 2-match suspension. Still things on the card for the old 15 yellow cards. It's never been done before. We're not even sure what the punishment is when you get to 15.
Or Jay Pally.
It literally doesn't say it on the Premier League website.
Does those kind of things run into the next season? If you get sent off on the last day of the season, are you banned for the start of the next?
Yeah, would be.
Okay, let's not get him to 15. Stick at 14.
Yeah, let's stick at 14. But Polina comes back in. So I think you're right that Sasa Lukic has done nothing to be dropped, and generally Marco Silva is very loyal to players that have put in you know, man of the match worthy performances. He doesn't tend to drop them next game. Pelinha is a special case. Does it become a Pelinha Lukic?
I don't know if that gets the best out of him, which is the weird thing, because I'm not 100% sure that Lukic is an obvious Pelinha replacement, but I just think that maybe seeing them together, we haven't seen the best of Sasha. Now, maybe that's just a lack of opportunities to have them both in from the start. And I'd be intrigued to see what it allowed us to do. But actually, what I thought Sasha did really well was dropping in between the centre-backs, picking up the ball and starting attacks, which is what Pelinha does. Mm. And with two of them doing the same thing, I think actually out of possession, it would be fine. But in possession, I think we might just have an extra man in the slots that Marco won't necessarily want them in. And, you know, obviously we've seen Sasha, well, some of us have seen Sasha play in a more advanced role for Torino and be able to actually glide through the middle of the pitch and do those things. But I'm not quite sure how it's ever looked in a Fulham shirt and what that might look like. But as you say, you know, if that full Wolves midfield is there, then it's a strong midfield. It's one that has goals in it. Tommy Doyle's come into it as well recently and been a bit of a threat. I think he might play tad higher up here because of the lack of available options for Gary O'Neill. But, you know, all the same, I wonder if this is the opportunity to guys to try that and just be like, okay, let's see what a really solid team does in that position. But then again, you know, has he got that space for creative control when Willian's back in the thoughts? Harry Wilson feels a bit undroppable. Bobby Reid did really well for obviously Fulham's first goal. Adama will have a point to prove against his old side, but also, you know, scored his first goal. Is he going to be in from the start? I doubt it, but it's worth considering. There's a lot of different moving parts now. And Alex Iwobi, who had another sensational game, needs to be in there somewhere. So where does that leave us?
Did you think he had a sensational game?
I thought for about 60 minutes he was excellent.
Okay. I thought it was like, you know, after the high of his performance at Old Trafford, I thought it was a 7 out of 10. I didn't think it was like the worst.
There was a moment in the second half, I think attacking the Fulham end early on, where he like Cruyff turns, spins out of the ball dropping out of the sky and like takes two players out. It's just like one of the most, you know, it won't ever get there because it's not iconic enough, but it's like a Berbatov level touch.
Right.
It's just like absolutely sublime. I love Iwobi so much. We're better when he's on the pitch. And the way that he sets up the chances for both Wilson and for Pereira, which should be in the back of the net. If he comes out of that game with two assists, maybe it looks a bit different.
So, honestly, it's a real, like, selection.
Great problem to have.
It's a great problem to have, but it goes to show that, like, whilst we kind of demand players and, you know, you need them when you're got lots of...
When it's threadbare, yeah.
And suddenly you're in this position, like, some good players are going to have to be on the bench. I mean, my hunch would be you don't make changes for the sake of them when you're winning, especially when you've had a week between games. My thoughts would be just one change, Pelinha probably for Reid.
Yeah, I think that's maybe just about what he'll do. Although if it is Pelinha coming in, he might take the gamble of playing TC in there as well next to him.
Yeah. And because TC did nothing wrong to get dropped either.
No.
He was just purely...
It was because Pelinha wasn't there. You have to be a little bit more defensive. So
Pelinha gets a 2-game suspension, so does Tom
TC.
Kenny.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. So... Yeah, I'm intrigued to see what happens in the midfield, but I don't really think there's much else to change.
The only option, if you really wanted to get Willian back, is to put Iwobi instead of Pereira. But as we spoke about, Pereira's so key to the system.
Yeah, he's not going to drop Pereira.
Yeah.
Not after what he said this week about him.
I think as long as Fulham keep winning, he won't make too many. But at the moment when there's even, you know, a draw, something goes wrong, I think Marcus Silva won't be scared to ring the changes.
Well, that's the joy of depth, right?
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you do get to these stages. And that's why I think there's this optimism about Fulham's end of the season. Because suddenly it's a bit like, okay, well, we can ring the changes if players are tired. We'll be able to deal with the odd injury if players are in there. There's a lot to really like about this. So yeah, I'm excited about seeing this game. It's nice to watch it and just sort of have that pressure off. Obviously, you say that and, you know, I said it at the weekend as well. I was like, I'm actually quite, you know, I feel pretty free ahead of this game against Brighton, and brought a mate with me and he was like, you're not nervous? And I was like, not really. I was like, I think that, you know, if you get beaten by Brighton and they outplay you, that's okay.
Yeah.
Considering the amount of quality they have. But I was like, I don't think that they're in a great place right now with injuries and other concerns. I'm feeling relatively comfortable that if we lose today, it's not because we've shot ourselves in the foot. It's going to be because we've been comprehensively outplayed. And I feel very similar about this one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it's obviously going to be, I'm excited for this trip. I'm making the journey up. We're in that weird corner section of Molyneux. We're not in the lower bit, which is normally, which I think is because we've taken a smaller allocation. So then they put you up in the corner in the gods. But I actually, obviously,
it's a better view.
Yeah, because I was at that 2-0 game where we lost the season that we went up under Slavisa. Me and you went to that one, didn't we? And we lost 2-0 and we were awful. But we were up there that game. And I thought it was a really good view. And then last season, when down I went to the 0-0, it's a rubbish view that low down. So although it's obviously sad because we're not taking as many fans, I'm actually quite excited for
the view.
Yeah, the section that you get. And I think you can make a better atmosphere in that corner bit, rather than when you're kind of like
all on one level,
out quite thin all the way across the pitch, like different sections are chanting and stuff. So, yeah.
I like the Mole. Well, I've got to say, I really like it as a ground. I mean, obviously, it's a bit of a ball ache to get to, but I do think as a ground, I've been there a lot because I did a lot of FA Cup work there when I was working for BR.
Yeah.
And Wolves were the team we ended up covering because we were one of those winner stays on things. So I went three times in a row to see Wolves. And on that run, they beat Man United and Liverpool. When they got to the semi-finals and they got eventually...
Lost to Watford.
Yeah, they lost to Watford. So I was there a lot and it makes some a real good noise, the Mole. I've always had an enjoyable experience there. So, I mean, aside from that 2-0 loss where we were the worst ever.
That wasn't an enjoyable
sleepy
day.
Sleepy fan, Sammy.
Yeah, I slept on the train home, didn't I? I got a photo taken of me by some rude man. just before we finish and go into emails, I just wanted to give a plug to a couple of events happening with the Paul Allen Project. The Paul Allen Project is run by Claire Parrish in memory of her dad, Paul Parrish. And it's raising money for public access defibrillators, and they do amazing work. They do CPR training in South London, and they do lots of events to raise money. And there's a couple of really cool ones coming up in May, which I thought people listening to this might be interested in. So first of all, there's a charity football match at Sutton United's ground on Friday, the 3rd of May. There's a kids match at 6 p.m. for 30 minutes, and then there's an adult match over 18s, 7 p.m, 90-minute match. Get to play on a professional standard pitch. Might not be professional standard for much longer if Sutton don't stay up, but still.
4G is 4G.
Yeah. No, it's not 4G. It's grass now. It used to be 4G, didn't it? Anyway, fancy playing, head to paulallenproject.org. I've got my ticket. I'm excited. I'm going to get boot. I haven't played an 11-a-side match in an awful long time. But yeah, I'm going to be trying to cut in from the right wing. And then a few weeks later, on Thursday, the 23rd of May, they're doing a golf day at Farley Golf Club, which is, again, in Southwest London. And I'm heading off to that as well. So if you fancy a bit of golf, there'll be lots of Fulham fans there on the day. They've got prizes and raffles. And I think some of the Sky Golf people are coming down as well. It's just going to be an awesome day. 23rd of May, get your ticket. I think it's like a £25 deposit. So it's not even that you're having to pay too much up front. And then obviously there'll be more to pay on the day. It all goes to an unbelievable cause as well.
Yeah.
The PaulAllenProject.org charity football match in May. I'll put some links in the description of this podcast. But yeah, if you fancy either of those, then yeah, it'd be fun to have you join us. It'd be good. Right. We'll take a break
there.
There. Thank you very much. And it shows that I've done a good sell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you sold this to me a long time ago, but I will see you there nonetheless.
All right, we'll take a break and afterwards we'll answer some of your emails. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy here with Jack Collins. Let's go through some of your emails. I've got so many emails, so let's try and rattle through some today because I want to clear the inbox. Thank you so much for getting in touch. We really appreciate it. hello@fulhamish.co.uk for your Thursday Club emails and also for your This Will Catch On entries. TJ Fogarty.
Shout out TJ.
Hello, TJ from Philadelphia. Says, hi all. Let me start by saying we are safe. Three teams probably won't reach 35 points and we're not going to lose every match until the end of the season.
No.
Let's call last match day, March 2nd, the day we've known we're safe. Planning for next season in the Premier League should start this week. Really don't want a window like last season, because imagine what we could have done if Bassey and Iwobi had come in at the start of pre-season and we had a striker lined up as a Mitro replacement. Without a doubt, our most successful signing since we've come up was Polina, and he joined us before the squad left pre-season in Portugal. We're fairly established in the Premier League at this point, and we'll have a two-season head start on teams coming up this year. Next season, we should really be looking to push for Europe / a domestic trophy. I just hope we don't leave the vast majority of our business until next season has started again. Thanks from TJ. So it's not really a question, but more just TJ's thoughts. I always wonder with this, though, like, is it a case that we're not thinking about it? Because without trying to completely stick up for what the club does in the transfer window, and there definitely is an element of, like, leaving business so late is frustrating. Is it that we're not looking? Because I feel like the club must be having these thoughts as well. They must know, right, we've got to prepare for the Premier League. Is it just the way that we do business of trying to do it late is the problem?
I think there's an element of reactivity, which is a shame. But we've spoken about it before in terms of, you know, succession planning, in terms of having different profiles of player in that complement each other as well as allow for replacement in a pinch. There is this element of, we don't know yet what the summer's going to look like in terms of departures. And so what we need to be thinking about right now, I think, is not necessarily, yes, we should, I mean, targets should never stop as far as I'm concerned, right? There should be players being brought up on boards and looking at their numbers and starting to then try and assess them over longer periods of time to see if they'd fit. Then you go and work out whether the cultural fit works, whether they would fit nicely into the squad mechanics. I think that's something that maybe gets underestimated a little bit. This feels like a really good group at Fulham with, you know, people all pulling in the same direction, and you don't want to disrupt that. So part of that is this. And then you think, okay, who are the players coming into the last years of their contract? Are Fulham going to activate, we assume, the contract extension on Kenny Tete for an extra year? Because right now, he's a free agent in the summer.
Yeah.
What happens with Tosin? Are we going to be able to convince Tosin Adebayo to stay at Fulham? Or is that now, are we past the point of no return on that? Because if we're past the point of no return and we don't think there's any chance of him staying whatsoever, that's where you go, right, well, we need a right centre back to partner and work with Calvin Bassey in a similar way to what Tosin has. That's the key element. Now, I hope he stays. But if he doesn't, we need to be all over that from the minute we walk into the transfer window, because I think that's a key spot that could make or break next season. You work out what's going on with Polina. Now, as we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, I don't think it's a done deal that he goes anywhere this summer, because I'm not sure who's going to be able to afford him, and if the clubs that are able to afford him need him. So that leaves us in a slightly different situation to last summer, where it did feel like someone was going to come in at some point. So there's considerations to be had there. Then it goes, okay, you go, well, we need a number nine, you assume, if Breuer is going to leave in the summer. If he doesn't play with us and he ends up, you know, we're paying that 4 million clause, that's going to hurt Chelsea's chances of trying to get, you know, more money for him. At that point, if we thought he was a good fit, is it worth re-entering that conversation at the lower price point? Because are you going to get much better than a Breuer for sub 20 million if that's what they end up selling him for? I don't know, but it's worth considering. Does Carlos Vinicius get sold in the summer? Is there an option to buy him? If there isn't, then where is he going to go? Because the last thing we need is four strikers on the books when we play with a one striker system. So all of this needs to be considered. And this is what I think the club needs to be working on right now. Where we think we are, and look, they might be, but it always feels like these decisions come down to the last minute. And actually what I'd like is the club to be ahead of these, so that by the time it gets to June the 1st or June 30th, whenever these contracts expire, we know exactly where we are.
I think you need a mixture of both, right? I think the signings that come middle of the summer are there for pre-season. Ala Polina are great. And Bassey was done reasonably early.
Yeah.
In the summer. I mean, these things always take long and it's frustrating. You're there linked with someone for 6 weeks and you're wondering what the hell's going on.
Yeah, but you also look at someone like Castagna and what the fee was going to be and et cetera. And then it coming down so drastically at the end of the season, you go, okay, it was difficult, but we were also looking for a, inverted commas, backup right back. yeah. behind Kenny Tete. Now, he's succeeded him and gone on to do great things and become the first-choice right-back. But I'm not 100% sure that was the plan from the start of the season. And so there was no point in us paying the exact fee Leicester wanted on someone we thought was going to be second-choice right-back.
Yeah.
You're okay to wait for that. It's only when it becomes a key player, a real like heart and soul of the team, that it needs to be completely and utterly integrated from day dot. And that's what Polina was. It's what Bassi has become. But also, you know, you can't really do that unless you know for a certain where you are with the squad and what's happening. And you know, last summer, yes, we should have been more aware of what things were going on and how things were going to play out. But the Mitrovic situation was deeply unclear for many weeks.
Yeah. Well, there was... Oh, it was such willy wonty. And in beautiful hindsight, I think everyone at Fulham should have just acknowledged he's a goner, prepare for him to go. And it caught, I think it caught Fulham blindsided.
Yeah.
Last summer. I think the Mitch, everything else, I think was fairly planned out and has just about worked.
Yeah. 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 But I mean, by plan or design or chance, I don't 100% know. But yeah, we feel like we've come out of it okay.
Yeah, but the Mitrovic thing blindsided us. And I'm confident that we will make a cut. And also, I think that it's great to look around in the last-minute deals for players that are a bonus. The Adamas, oh, it wasn't actually a last-minute deal, but it was kind of late-ish in the window, wasn't it? I mean, that was a brilliant bit of late business that has boosted the squad.
100%.
I think there's a mixture of both, but I do agree. I just like this summer to be a bit less fractious because it felt like last points everyone was about to kill each other. And
yeah, I could just do without it descending into, you know, the seventh level of hell again.
Yeah. Next email is from Marcus Rusborn. And there's not a lot to really answer here, but I think it's very interesting on a topic that comes up, I swear, loads on this podcast on the Sunday about good old Mr. Bishop. And what this all means. But I think Marcus gives us a little bit of indication, actually, something that happened on Saturday and exactly potentially what the reason was behind it. So he says, "Hi guys, Marcus here, long time listener and second time emailer, although not sure if my first email ever got read out." Sorry, Marcus. He said, "Listening to Monday's pod and the topic of the mysterious Mr. Bishop came up again. I was at the game on Saturday, seated in the Johnny Haynes stand, and sadly, a gentleman in front of us collapsed and required medical treatment. The gentleman was aided by another man seated in front of him who was extremely quick to call for help and ask if anyone nearby was a doctor. Fortunately, another man then presented himself as a doctor who came down and assisted the gentleman until the medical team arrived. The gentleman seemed to recover well and was taken away by the medical team, which was very relieving, but it was quite a scary and intense situation to experience for all around. I guess I just wanted to give a shout out to everyone who put the football aside and drew their attention to the gentleman that required help, regardless of it being 10 minutes into an entertaining game. Fulham fans came together and made sure he was okay. Following that, I think it's clear that the Mr. Bishop announcement relates to a medical emergency. Bishop being the Bishop's Park entrance/stand, the voiceover said Mr. Bishop has left the stadium once the medical team had taken the gentleman out of the stand." So
I think it's any sort of emergency.
Yes, I think it is.
So I think it's a fire or a medical emergency or anything else. I was talking to a friend about this recently because I met him after the game and we were talking about, he's a Chelsea fan, and he was saying
you have a mate that's a Chelsea fan?
I have plenty of mates that are Chelsea fans, unfortunately. It's a curse of growing up in West London.
Yeah.
But there is an element that he said, I think that their one is Officer Brooke. So I wonder if they're all related to parks nearby, because obviously Stamford Bridge is on Ealbrook Common.
Yeah.
And obviously Fulham is on Bishop's Park. I wonder if they're all tied into that.
Well, one very random gig that I had, I literally only did it once, and I don't even know if it exists anymore, but there used to be a radio at Wembley Stadium, but it didn't go out in the stadium. It just went around the concourse, and it was quite an old school setup, and I did it once for the Challenge Cup final. It must have been like
rugby league.
Yeah,
right. It was random.
I mean, it wasn't anything to do with the rugby league. Why I got hired?
You just played the music.
Yeah, I basically played music and had to be the DJ along to it. But it was a very weird gig because you couldn't like crack jokes. You kind of just had to be like,
"Welcome to the challenge, Betfair Challenge Cup final." It was a tune.
Yeah, it was basically like, "That was the Killers. Welcome along to Wembley for the Challenge Cup final. Hope you have a lovely day. And here's another song, Bon Jovi, whatever." But part of the role was that you had to read the emergency announcements if an emergency happened. So someone, and it actually like happened three times because like, I don't know, someone left the toaster on But that one was Mr. Sands, which is kind of the commonly known abbreviation, often for a fire or some sort of emergency. And I would have to go on the radio only to that particular sector, and I'd have to be like, Mr. Sands is in C3. And that would alert some sort of emergency people to go along to C3. And then I'd have to be like, Mr. Sands has left C3. And so I don't know. I mean, every stadium has its own protocols, but I assume it's something along those lines. But yes, I can't have done a very good job because they never asked me back.
I've just spent the last minute while you've been telling this story trying to see if there's a park nearby called Sands. I can't find
it. No, Mr. Sands is like the globally known fire like abbreviation as far as I know.
There you go.
But obviously, yeah, I guess some clubs change it up to something slightly more unique, but Wembley didn't.
Well, there you have it. Yeah. You learn something new every day.
Yeah, and I never got a call back.
I wonder if Brentford is like Mr. Griffin.
God.
Yeah.
Mr. M4.
I don't know. Who knows? They're quite near Boston Manor Park, I suppose. Mr. Boston.
Mr. Hounslow bus stop.
Oh, there you go. Now we've gone into full wild mode.
Matt Littlejohn says, question for the Thursday pod. Whither Fulham America? Says Sammy, Jack and Peter. No Peter today, PSG are playing this week. Question for you. What are your thoughts about the future of Fulham America? Our beloved Tim Ream is at the end of his career at Fulham and Jedi could well be sold this summer. The Fulham America tank is otherwise empty and the Khans, Alistair, I Hate the Fans, McIntosh seem to be doing nothing to recruit replacements. Fulham America could soon be no more. What is going on? And what American players do you think the club should be trying to sign? Matt from Maryland, USA. I guess I'll say that I don't think we should ever be signing a player just because they're American.
No. Although I do think that MLS is a rich and slightly untapped market that Fulham could probably do better at examining.
Tough to get someone out of MLS. I mean, there aren't many players that come straight out of MLS and do bits in the Premier League. Obviously, Almiron's the obvious example.
Yeah, even that took a while, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that we're seeing a change in MLS and... You know, I write for their website, so I do have a vested interest, I probably should declare here. But I think that we're seeing a change in MLS. And whilst you can, a lot of the headlines will be about Inter Miami and the project they're building there, well, project might be the wrong word, but what they're building there with the ex-Barcelona mob. Actually, I think what's really interesting is this change from a, inverted commas, retirement home to actually a league where a lot of players are being brought through very young and starting to be given opportunities to shine. And so I'd be looking at someone like Jack McGlynn, the Philadelphia Union, or, you know, a couple of players that are really starting to burst through and make good accounts themselves. I think we saw last year that Wolves sent Jerson Mosquera off to Cincinnati. He became a really key part of that team that walked through the Eastern Conference, at least in the regular season. And then now he's come back on straight on loan to Villarreal, and I'm absolutely bang sure that Jerson Mosquera will be in Wolves' squad next year. So I think this shows that there is a space and a breeding ground for new players. And I think it's a market that Fulham should be aware of because it's one they have already links to within the fan base, two, they have links to within the ownership, and three, it feels like a very natural place for teams, I think, to start shopping. We're starting to see bigger teams look to MLS as a pond that they can fish from. You know, the links haven't gone away. Now, Thiago Almada's a very special player, but Atleti are linked to buying him straight from MLS. Like, times are changing, and I would like to see Fulham explore that market a little bit more, if nothing else. But for what it's worth, I think both Tim Ream and Jedi will still be at the club next year.
I think Tim Ream will. I think that I genuinely think we're going to have to fend off serious offers for Anthony Robinson this summer.
Yes, I think we're going to have to fend off offers. I'm just not sure exactly where they're going to come from.
Well, Liverpool have been linked.
Liverpool have been linked, but also, is he going to go there and be a backup to Andy Robertson?
Well, given his injury record, he might get quite a lot of games.
I just think, I think that Liverpool have bigger fish to fry than their left-back position. And also, they're about to go into a summer where they are changing not only their manager, but they don't have a director of football. They're still trying to get Michael Edwards back to come in and show, you know, absolutely run the operation. That doesn't seem to be going anywhere at the moment. It all just feels like everything's a little bit up in the air at Liverpool. So I think that any links that have stuck around previously might not be as forthright in the summer because Xabi Alonso, if he takes the job, or whoever does take that job next, is going to want to bring in their own players who might play a completely different style in terms of fullback. If it is Alonso, he's obviously played with wingbacks a lot at Leverkusen. If it is someone like Ruben Amorim, who's also linked, he's played exclusively with wingbacks at Sporting, and both of them have really been wingers pushed forward. I think links to teams where everything could change this summer is probably not quite worth the same as a link to, yeah, he was linked to, I know he's been linked before to Guardiola's City, but with the operation that's going there and what they seem to be being able to hold on over and over again, I'd be more worried about that than a link to Liverpool from last summer.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of like actual kind of like current US senior players, I mean, one of the PSV boys, if they wanted to move to the Premier League, obviously would be an interesting option.
I think Malik Tillman would be a very, very interesting option, but I think he's going to get a shot at Bayern before too long.
Yeah.
So that could be something, but I think there's...
I like Pepe.
I like Pepe too, but I think he'd cost too much to be a backup nine. And I'm not sure he's the goal machine striker that people are after if they're going to displace Muniz at the top of the order.
Yeah. Final email, this one from Tom Fauntleroy. He says, Adama is a late game cheat code. If we'd had him healthy all season, I'm confident we'd have about 10 more points. Adama Traore makes onions cry, can hear sign language, and doesn't fill out online forms because he'll never submit. Adama Traore can build a snowman out of rain, beat the sun in a staring contest, and invented giraffes when he uppercut a horse. Adama Traore can slam a revolving door, drove his mum home from the hospital on the day he was born, and found the last digit of pi. Love the show, Tom from Kentucky.
Salute. I really enjoyed that. That was great.
All right, couple of quick...
Someone made that into a song.
Yeah, maybe that was for This Will Catch On, I don't know. Anyway, this will be a quick This Will Catch On. This one is from Joshua Braxton. He says, hey, Fulhamish team, long time listener, first time email. Everyone feels they need to say it now. Love what you guys are doing. This Will Catch On has never failed to lift my mood and bring a smile to my face. So wanted to do my bit to contribute. And who knows, maybe hear my creation chanted from the hammy ending games to come. We can all dream, hey? Calvin Bassey has cemented himself in the core of our squad this season. After his heroics at AFCON, he fully deserves a decent chant of his own. He does have one, but anyway. I'd love to see what you think of my chant for Bassey to ABBA's Gimme, gimme, gimme.
Bassey, 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 the heart of our back line. The Super Eagle's flying, he's a one of a kind. Bassey, 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 the heart of our back line. The Super Eagle's flying, he's a one of a kind.
It's worth it just for that bit alone. Just for the I mean, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I can see that catching on. I think it's the most inventive chant we've ever had, but I can see it catching on.
Yeah. Well, we aren't the masters of inventive chants.
No, not really. I mean, yeah, I'm on board, although I do like Calvin Bassey's song.
Yeah, no, I think Calvin Bassey's is one of the most original.
It's about the best we've got. So, yeah, I mean, adding a second one for him, that would be very on brand. You know, sharing two chants for the rest of the entire squad combined, whilst also, I enjoyed, you know, Adama Traore swapping for Alex Iwobi. He was singing, oh, Alex Iwobi, followed by, oh, Adama Traore.
Oh, I know.
It was like, all right, cool. But it would be on point then to have two chants for Calvin Bassey and just one that's shared around the rest of the squad together.
Connor Rains sends the final This Will Catch On today. He says, greetings, Fulhamish crew. I hope that you are still basking in the glory of the past 2 weeks. Our centre-back pairing of Tosin and Calvin Bassey is simply impeccable and they deserve a song to celebrate their partnership. I've gone for a remake of an Elton John classic, Benny and the Jets. It's short and simple, so hopefully this will catch on and convince Tosin to sign a new contract. I mean, it might do the opposite. We never know. Keep up the great work, and hopefully I will see some of you at the Tottenham game. And this is cheers from Connor.
They've got pace for days. They're never phased. They just humiliated Evan Fergie. Oh, Tosin and Seabass. Tosin. Tosin and Seabass. Tosin. 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 Tosin and Seabass.
I don't think I've anyone ever heard anyone call him Seabass before.
Oh, I see that occasionally on social media he gets called Seabass.
It's like out here sounding like a nice meal.
It does sound a little bit like he's one of these singing waiters and he's reading you the menu. I mean, I don't know what a tosin is, but
some sort of salad.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had a lot of fun there, but I mean, I think there's more chance of a snowball getting through hell intact than that catching on. But that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy it. I really enjoy the idea of like one game where they had a really good game against Evan Ferguson becoming absolutely immortalized in their song without him actually doing all that much.
Thank you very much, Connor. That'll do for This Will Catch On. I've got loads more to get through in the next couple of weeks. And that'll do for the pod today. Jack, thank you.
Thank you, Sammy. Always a pleasure.
Fulhamish will be back on Sunday reviewing everything that happens at Molineux. We'll also be doing a quick take. If you aren't subscribed to the YouTube channel and you haven't caught our quick takes, get on the YouTube channel. If you're sometimes at a bit of a loose end, want some Fulham analysis, subscribe to the Fulhamish YouTube and you will get it straight there after every match. So yeah, Jack, thank you, as I said.
Thank you, Sammy. Always fun.
And we'll be back on Sunday. Come on, you Whites.
You Whites.